Look, if we targeted getting off to a better start than we did against Mayo. We were very disappointed with our first half performance against Mayo. I think we definitely brought a lot of the learnings from that game out there today, particularly the way we defended.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The LOI Pod on Off The Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off The Ball all season.
Welcome back to another episode of the League of Ireland Pod. I'm Ben Symes, filling in this week for Stephen Doyle. A pretty busy week, I think it's fair to say we've had. We've had World Cup stars in action. We've had European draws to take place for next season. And we've also had a small matter of a couple of rounds of LOI fixtures as well. Stephen might be here and I might be standing for him, but I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the other two regulars of the League of Ireland Pod, Vinny Perth, Gareth McGlynn. How you doing, lads?
All right, Ben. What's up, Greg?
All good, all good. I think it's only right that we start with the biggest news of the week. Shamrock Rovers captain Pico Lopez gone from Tala to Atlanta, and he keeps Spain at bay, a 0-0 draw for Cape Verde. Vinny, I'll start with you on this. Were you surprised maybe that some of the heroic defending that he put on display, or is this just run-of-the-mill Pico that we see every week in the League of Ireland?
He was operating at such a high level. I was lucky enough. I was working on the game for a TV station, so it was really different and interesting to watch it that way. So for South African TV, believe it or not, Ben. But there you go. It was
gone international, Vinny.
Yeah. I've gone. I'm too big time now. But you know what? It was brilliant. And I think Pico summed it up so well. He said he felt like he was representing two countries, and I felt really proud of his performance. It was like an Irishman, obviously, in wearing a different crest, but. I think he was. I felt a real sense of pride in the league in terms of what he did, and they had to hang on at different stages, particularly at the end. Everything Spain done was in front of them, but then when called upon, last 5-10 minutes, himself and his other centre half were heroic, and obviously the goalkeeper as well. But there was parts of Richard Dunne against Russia, wasn't there, in some of the blocks, particularly the big one at the end. So, hugely proud, delighted for him. He's one of the good guys in Irish football, and hopefully he gets rewarded over the next few years on the back of what he's done. So, absolutely delighted for him, and a real sense of pride.
Gareth, this is something that we've never seen before, a current League of Ireland player playing at the World Cup. I was down at Priory Market in Tala, and there was, you know, loads of Rovers fans down to the chairman all along the way. It feels like a pretty big moment for the league in general. I know we've Joey Anang to come up as well for Ghana. We'll see or not if he plays. But no matter what happens for the rest of the tournament, Pico has put in a monumental performance already.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then, I mean, Cape Verde to get a point against Spain, I mean, has to be one of the best points in World Cup history, considering the levels of them. But, I mean, his performance in the heart of the defence, obviously the keeper got a lot of plaudits, 7 saves. He was immense as well. But outside of him, Pico was a standout player. I mean, we're not being biased just because he plays in the League of Ireland. I think everyone's saying the same thing. But seeing a League of Ireland player, it has to give current League of Ireland players, even the young players in the league, a bit of hope that maybe not Ireland, but if they've any other kind of allegiances, that's the levels that you can get to, all off the back of a LinkedIn message. It's incredible stuff. And then he was rewarded at the end by throwing himself in and it hitting his head, not knowing much about it, but that was the winner right there. And it got Cape Verde a well-earned point. And then as Vinny said as well, obviously, this is incredible, and he's in the moment, and he's got to enjoy it. But God knows what he's going to happen to him now after football. This is going to open up a load of opportunities for him that not a lot of players think about when they're playing. They're just so in the moment, playing football at League of Ireland level, if they're lucky enough to go to a different level or a higher level. But now he has hopefully set himself up, got enough recognition for loads of other opportunities.
Yeah, I know their keeper Vizinha, I think his social media following has rose to over 10 million. Because it's not quite 10 million, but it was under 20,000, I think, and it's over 50,000 now after that performance the other night. So he also was on American TV with James Corden and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, but he's not the only one gone international. Vinny Perth on South African TV as well. That's a good bit of, it's a good fun fact for us, Vinny, there. Of course, we had to focus on the action close at home as well in the League of Ireland. We had European draws yesterday, just to run you through if you didn't hear anything on today. So Shamrock Rovers in the first round of the Champions League would face Floriana of Malta, formerly managed by Roy Collins for a brief stint. Rovers are seeded pretty much the whole way to the European exploits this year. They were the top seed in the first round of the UEFA Champions League. In the Europa League, Derry City Gareth, CSKA Sofia. That's one that Derry will remember before facing Sofia a good couple of years ago. In the Conference League, Bohemians are going to face St. Joseph's of Gibraltar, who are going to be sick of the sight of Irish teams after facing Sherbourne, Shamrock Rovers, Cliftonville, I think maybe Larne as well. They might have played throughout the years. They're going to have Bohemians out in Gibraltar. And then Sherbourne faced Fenner, who they're going to face today in the second round. It's Noam Kalyu of Estonia, who lost to St. Patrick's Athletic last year in the UEFA Conference League. Or Linfield again. This feels like some sort of joke, lads. Those games are going to be played at the start of July. Gareth, I might just ask you quickly, first round of the Europa League for Derry, CSKA Sofia. The whole list of teams that Derry could have drawn looked pretty tough, but that tie does sound a pretty tough one for Tiernan Lynch's side.
Yeah, it's one of the better ones. I mean, they're all tough teams. Azerbaijan, I think, was the furthest they could have went. You do not want that trip. CSKA Sofia, we played them in 2009. It was a tighter game. Don't get me wrong. I think Derry City in 2009 were in a better place. Stephen Kenny was a manager. We had a really strong squad. We had good continuity. They beat us 2-1 overall. Vinny did a bit of work on that as well. It wasn't that much. It was just about a 2-1. I mean, Tam McManus, you might remember, missed a great chance out there to put us in front. And then back at home, it was just kind of us trying to get that extra goal and them holding out. A couple of Brazilian players back then, they look to be doing all right now. It's a tough, don't get me wrong, it's a tough a draw for Derry, but one that they shouldn't fear that much. It's almost a free slap when you know that if you're beat, you slip down into the second stage qualifier in the Conference League. And I think should they lose, they've got Croatian opposition. So, yeah, nice one for Tiernan to get. And again, it's pretty accessible as well for the fans. It's not, I think, maybe two flights max, whereas some of the other ones are two, three, four flights. So one they look forward to.
Yeah,
an interesting one. The reason Gareth started on the bench was I was involved with the Derry staff that time, so we left him on the bench.
and you didn't hold that. You didn't hold that good, Gareth. That's nice to see. I'm going to go with your.
Sorry, Ben. Real quick, that Derry side. If you think about the Derry side now and then, it's interesting. Mark Farren, I think, started, didn't he, Gareth? Maybe off the right-hand side, maybe the late Mark Farren. And you think of the back four, Stephen Gray, Clive Delaney, Peter Hutton, what a player he was. And I think Gerald Bryan might have been there at the time, was he?
Yeah, he was there.
So, really strong side. Barry Malloy, Rory Higgins, and Derry. That's a threesome and a half, isn't it, Gareth, of local boys. So they were very, very strong. And Tommy Stewart as well was on Monday wing. So they were good top side back then. And they pushed CSKA Sofia all the way, home and away.
Yeah, a lot of current League of Ireland and Niffle names in there as well, managers. I'm going to go with your pronunciation, Gareth, of CSKA. I know Moscow or CSKA. Moscow, but I'm not so sure on Sofia. But if you played against them, I think I'm going to go with you over me on that one. Just look ahead, a couple of the other ties, lads. Sherbourne against maybe Linfield again seems a little bit mad, but Shamrock Rovers in the Champions League, Floriana in Malta. I mean, it looks like Rovers are going to have a pretty nice run through the first few early rounds anyway of this European qualification campaign. Back-to-back Conference League group stages. Vinny, what's the realistic goal or target here? Are you looking for the Europa League group stages? Are you happy to settle for the Conference League again?
I think Rovers have to push for Europa League. But the difference now in the last number of years is that sort of safety net of European Conference League. And UEFA have been very fair to nations like Ireland. It's a great money spinner for us. It's been, obviously, it's been a huge help to Shamrock Rovers and Shelbourne of last year. So when you're the champions of Ireland, I think you shouldn't say you should be, because you can always get a raw draw where somebody comes out of a nation that's really strong but has a really low seed, and then you can be unlucky. But the champions of Ireland should now, I think, it'd be a disappointment if Shamrock Rovers aren't minimum in group stages again this year. I think the champions should be there. I think they will be. The draw is very favourable to them. The reason it is, by the way, is because they're so good in Europe. They've built up such a strong coefficient. So that's the rewards of the form in the last number of years in Europe. So I hope they chase Europa League, but they need a little bit of luck in that round three, round four draw for that. You know, the seed won't be as strong when that time comes. So here goes.
As you said then, the other game, Shelbourne face Naam Cali Linfield and Bohemians to face St. Joseph's of Gibraltar.
Sorry, it's a good draw for Shells, isn't it, Ben?
It's a very good draw. I thought it was some sort of joke, as I said, and I saw Linfield coming out again. I watched Naam Cali last year against St. Patrick's Athletic. I thought they were okay. Didn't think they were any great. I didn't think Pats were at their best either in those two games when they played against them. So Shells will fancy at minimum getting to a third round of this year. And again, like we said, this is clubs getting a bit of reward for their performances in Europe over the last couple of years. And Bowes returning to face St. Joseph's of Gibraltar. I know it's quite a small away end out there in Gibraltar, and they all play in the same stadium. So Bowes fans, I saw there's already a couple of hundred booking their tickets out there. That's why Stephen Doyle isn't here. He's gone off to book his flights to Gibraltar. I don't envy them trying to book that.
I went out to the Magpies game with Derry. It's a nice wee stadium. It's a great viewpoint. They look after you out there. Obviously, you fly into Malaga, you can fly into Gibraltar. That's a good draw for Bowes. Magpies and St. Joseph's, not much in it between the two teams. I would fancy Bowes heavily against St. Joseph's.
I thought Steve wasn't here this week, Gareth, because you had a few words for him after last week.
The 4-1 defeat wasn't enough. He didn't fancy listening to me for half an hour talking about how bad Bowes were, but I'm sure we'll get into that.
Well, I was going to say, Gareth, you've a double whammy here, because you could have had Steve-O here to rip into about Derry City versus Bohemians, and you must have been thinking on Friday night, God, what a week for Derry City this is. We'll get on to what happened after with Derry City over the last couple of days. But firstly, Friday night, a 4-1 victory at Celtic Park. Bowes X-Man James Clark coming back to bite them a little bit. I was speaking to some Derry fans after the game, and it was just a little bit of feeling of euphoria for a couple of moments after some pretty dismal results and performance over the last couple of weeks. I presume you're on top of the world after that one.
I wouldn't say euphoria. I think I was taking it a bit far, Ben. I think relief is more the word. But I tell you what, see, if you had asked me after about 18, 20 minutes, I would have been going, I cannot. See, if somebody had said to me after 20 minutes, this is going to end up 4-1 to Derry City, I would have said there was no chance. Bowes were that good in the first 18 minutes. They played Derry off the park. Derry couldn't get the grips of the game. Centre of the park, Voy, Tierney, they were ripping them apart. And then, of course, got that goal. Within the first probably 8 minutes, Rooney's deliveries were incredible. He hit the crossbar, probably should have had another goal. But then what happened after that? It was, I couldn't believe it. I mean, Diallo gave the ball away twice before he gave the ball away in the goal. You might not have seen it on the highlights. And then as soon as Bowes conceded that goal, the whole thing just fell from under them. They did not get back to what they were doing well in the first 20 minutes. It was almost like the confidence had completely gone out of them. Now, you got to give Derry credit for that as well. Derry created carnage, pressed them, got the goal, and then they basically smelled blood. And then Barr got the rocket. So if you think about the first two goals, Diallo gave the ball away for the first goal mistake. Clark does well. The Barr goal is just a rocket. But after that, Bowes just never looked back. I'd be concerned now of how poor they were after they conceded.
Gareth, just on Conor Barr, like, I know he scored that unbelievable goal and that, but he's been well talked up, isn't he, in Derry, in terms of you've obviously seen him a lot closer than us down here. without being impressed with. What is it that makes him, or people are speaking so highly of him?
I think it's a funny one, because Conor Barr was nowhere near the starting 11. He was actually nowhere near the bench at the beginning of the year. He was supposed to play in the President's Cup, didn't even make the squad. Then we got a load of injuries. We were playing left footers all across the back at one stage. But since he's come in, it's almost be a case of himself and Patrick McLean. And Patrick McLean has to take a lot of credit as well alongside him. Patrick's been very, very good alongside him, just managing him through that. He's had Cotter out on the right of him as well, which hasn't helped him. Cotter's been very poor over the last 3 or 4 weeks. He got hooked at halftime. I know there was talk of a little knock, but Conor Barr's been excellent. It's his aggression, Vinny, that's impressed me more than anything. He is a big, tall guy, and he's almost got that wiry look about him, and he's strong enough. But see, his aggression against big players really impressed me. I didn't think he was as physical as he was, and it hasn't taken a wrinkle out of him. I mean, Edmondson came up, Boyd came up, Martin came up, and he was man of the match in both those games, and he was excellent all night. Don't get me wrong, everybody will talk about the goal, but even if he doesn't score the goal, defensively he's been really good, and he's got called into the 21s as well.
There's a good balance though, isn't it? Like, it goes back to all the criticism there in the start of the season. When you've got a right footer and a left footer playing either side of centre-half, that's the starting point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, this is a formation and a partnership that Tiernan's just fallen on. It's not something that he's kind of manufactured himself. And then he puts Dumigan in there when he needs him as well. But no, the two of them are doing well, no doubt about it. Barr especially.
Yeah, Conor Barr, as you said, called up to the Northern Irish under-21s for a bit of recognition. What happened to Bowes in that game? Like, as you said, the first 20 minutes, you could have never seen it coming. What did happen?
It was quite an open game, and Vinny, I'll tell you, we've been the Bowes games in the Brandywell, Dalymount, and there's always goals in the games for whatever reason. I mean, Pats and Shells came up to Celtic Park recently and just shut up shop, played two up front, Shells that played the conditions and really should have won the game. Derry couldn't break them down, but Bowes just left acres and acres of space. And in fairness, Derry did as well in the first 20 minutes. But it's always an open game. It's we always talk about styles. When Derry plays Bowes, because of the styles of each team, there's always going to be chances in both ends. And I have to say as well, Bowes could have been, I don't want to say out of sight,
but Gareth, there was a huge penalty decision in that game that didn't go away.
That's what I was about to say. Cotter, it's a stonewall penalty.
Yeah.
This is, I want to say Hennessy was the referee. This is, I keep talking about this and I don't like talking about it. He keeps getting the big decisions wrong. It's a stonewall penalty for Bowes. His both feet are off the ground. He's completely taken Devoy out of it. Devoy's gone in on goal. So that happens, I want to say, either 1-1 or 1-0.
1-1, I think, yeah. Put Bowes back in the lead, potentially.
Puts Bowes back in the lead, gives him a penalty. And then after that, after they didn't get that, as I said, Bowes were poor, and then of course Derry missed the penalty as well to make it even more 5-1.
I want to ask you, I was going to touch on it later on, but I might just go into it a little bit now. Did you notice many of the new rules taking place up at Celtic Park the other night?
No, don't get me wrong, the players were a lot quicker and stuff, and some of the shouts from the crowd not knowing the new rules was hilarious. But no, the referee didn't have to be on top of it, to be fair to him. The game moved pretty quickly. And again, that's the styles in both teams. So both teams wanted to get on with the game. They wanted to quicken the game up. They wanted to go and attack each other. You might come up against that when you get teams that have different styles.
Yeah, look, we'll return to that maybe a little bit later on in the episode, because there was an incident where I was at St. Patrick's Athletic versus Drogheda United that Drogheda weren't too happy about. But that was the start of the week for Derry, and then the bad news comes at the start of this week. So Josh Thomas, Deepo Akinyemi, Ben Doherty have all left the club. Henry Royla has been recalled by Charlton Athletic. Deepo Akinyemi took to social media yesterday, lads, addressing the rumours around his exit last night. He said, "Let me say this once so I don't have to speak about it again. I never left because of being on the bench. I never left because of attitude. In fairness, I never wanted to leave the club. I left because I'm not a left winger. I'm a big nine." And then went on to say, "You wouldn't play Romelu Lukaku on the left wing." What happened here with Deepo Akinyemi, Gareth?
If somebody sent me this right, I don't know if that's what he left. Is it York he went to?
Yeah, he went back to York, yeah.
I think that was in reference to him leaving York the first time.
Okay.
I don't think, because he wasn't played in the left for Derry, I don't think, at any stage. So just we don't know that. But I think going back to Derry and players leaving, that's a discussion we've been having for 18 months, 2 years. It's criminal. It doesn't happen in any club that I know of in the world that 7 or 8 players keep leaving. Listen, Depo, Ben, Rayla, they've all kind of come to social media. They've thanked the club, the fans, the players. There's been no mention of the management. So there's obviously a bit of disgruntlement there. Read into it what you want. But you can't keep turning over players. We can't keep saying the same thing. Now, Mark Connolly's just been appointed as director of football. So I'm hoping he brings some sort of stability, some sort of alignment between the fans, the club, the players, the board, because it's badly needed.
There was a lot of disappointments, rightly so, maybe among Derry fans about... But Doherty leaving in particular, like this is a situation that, you know, maybe we shouldn't really see happening, but it's came to fray. Like how is this keep happening at Derry City?
Ben, that is a $1 million question. It keeps happening because when you have a club, right, and you've got loads of money, you generally get lazy at all the other stuff because you think money's going to help that. What you have is a lack of strategy, a lack of identity, and then you empower. Every time a manager comes into the football club, he is given complete power of the football club, which in my eyes should never happen. So if he wants to play 5 at the back, if he wants to play 2 at the back, if he wants to create style, if he wants to get rid of the academy, not interested in the academy, if he wants to talk about identity, he just changes it. If he wants to use a particular agent, they go down that way. So I'm hoping that this director of football appointment, Mark Connolly, is the start of them putting a proper team off the pitch together, because you can't keep doing the same things and expect a different result. That'll send you mad.
The challenge is, though, Ben and Gareth, is, and this is going against everything I believe in and even saying this, but I don't know, Ben. I think you've got to ask the question. When it comes to Tiernan Lynch, it's really not a nice thing to say, but I don't think it's unfair at this stage to say he is so lucky to be still in his job now. And I don't think I've ever said that about a manager before in any walk of life, but he's very, very lucky, and things need to go his way now, Gareth, don't they, over the next few weeks, because or else the owner and people are just being pigheaded, because what they're doing is not good enough. Like, this chopping and changing, and I take Gareth's point about needing a director of football to give you sort of a pathway, but the manager is ultimately the one who signed these players, who's changed the shape, who's changed the system, who's constantly searching for stuff. So he's very, very lucky. Ultimately, I hope it works out for him. I don't wish any bad on him, but he can consider himself absolutely blessed to be still in the position.
Do you not think it'd be mad to get rid of the manager just before a European run, and Mark Connolly has come in, so we imagine it's going to change the shape up of the club? Like, is that not any sort of caveat to him?
Ben, I don't want him to lose his job, but why is he mad? Like, why is he mad? What could be mad about looking at the last 12 months at that club and think, if Tiernan Lynch wasn't at the club anymore, why would it be mad? There's nothing mad about that. That's just the game we're in. It's the game we're in.
I'm playing a devil's advocate for you here, Vinny, trying to see the other side of this sort of thing, where if you look at a European run about to come to fruition, and look, there's going to be a, as you said, hopefully for fans' sake, a switch up in structures at the club with Mark Connolly coming back. Like, Gareth, is there a chance that Connolly looks in this and says, you know, maybe it just needs a couple of tweaks, or are we looking at a bigger picture sort of solution here?
No, you've got to give him time. You've got to give Mark the opportunity to get in there and really look under the hood and find out what's going on. The problem I have is, obviously, I've been close to it now for 6 or 7 seasons. Nothing much has changed, you know. The only thing that keeps changing is the manager. And when the manager gets in, they either get burnt out or they do their own thing and it ends up falling in the face. I don't mind a manager coming in, but there's got to be some sort of blueprint or foundation for him to work with. And at the minute, Derry is just not there. I don't like changing the manager either. I said last year I thought it was incredible that the Tiernan was able to finish second. I thought it was a good job. But you're saying maybe not change manager. You've got to look at the whole thing. You've got to look at the bigger picture of what he's bringing to Derry City and the results that he's getting. And not all of it is his fault, like I just talked about. The support structures are not there. That's why previous managers have left. And when the previous managers have left, go to other clubs and you speak to them, they're like, oh my God, this is how a proper setup is. So it's a difficult one for the manager. I feel a wee bit for him, but also Vinny's right. I mean, you can't keep bringing on 78 players. I don't mind him doing it the first time, wanting to change the team. By the way, I didn't think the team needed open heart surgery, but to do it every window and almost have the players that you sign leave the club and say, I didn't enjoy it, it's a massive red flag.
There is just one little thing I want to talk about with Derry City. I feel like this is a Derry City pylon at the moment, Gareth, but what do we have you on here? James McLean was on World Cup coverage the other day, and he made a reference about, you know, being told one thing over the phone and then coming over and maybe seeing another thing. What do you think he means by that?
God knows. Thank God I wasn't involved in them telephone conversations. I have no idea. Listen, you know yourself, when you're a club trying to attract a player, you're telling them almost what they want to hear. There's obviously a bit of discrepancy there and what was discussed, and he feels that he was kind of not told the truth. But I think I'm sure there's going to be a conversation after his RTE comments to be able to kind of iron that out. And I don't see it being a big problem. It's just James saying how he feels, which is fine as well.
Have you ever run into anything like that, Vinny, where players that you're managing are on in the media?
Overpromised? Come on, Vinny, now. You've overpromised a few players.
Yeah, I think the world we live in now, I think that's a mountain of a molehill, to be fair to James. I think he said what he said. Would it have placed a couple of people in Derry? No, but I'm sure they would have dealt it very quickly. It could have meant anything. We've a good idea what it means. I just think that's a mountain of a molehill. And I think James is James. He's a little bit like what Duffer was in the league. Everything he says is sort of overhyped a little bit. I'm okay with it. Why would he be happy? At times he's not playing. The team aren't playing well. The club isn't going well. So what's he meant to say on RTE? Everything is great. I love Derry. It's my home club. Sure, he should be unhappy. So I'd be okay with it.
And let's be honest, Ben and Vinny, this is what we want. I mean, I'm sick of hearing the same nonsense out of players' mouths, of all the PC, politically correct nonsense about this is what you should say. We want a bit of honesty, and James is only saying what most fans are thinking. Nobody's happy, especially not James. James wanted to come back and really, really challenge and win trophies and get into Europe and play games. It's not happening. Obviously, his injuries played up with him. He's just frustrated, as we all are.
Derry City. It'll be in Pearce Stadium on Friday night. Last time I hosted this podcast, it was just after the Connacht Derby, and there was a couple of comments given out that I wasn't talking about Galway United. So we're going to talk about them here. Big fiasco about the fixture last week, being moved down to Cork City. You had a Galway United supporters bus break down in Buttevant on the way down, and they didn't get into the game until, I think it might have been the last couple of minutes, but they get in time to see Tariq Wilson's last minute winner at Turner's Cross on a rough L Friday night for Galway United. Is like Gareth, Derry have done this in Celtic Park, and they maybe have used their advantage by a couple of the results. I know you referenced the Pats and the Shells games, you know, being pretty grim watches, but they did keep clean sheets against sides that are would have been tough fixtures, let's say, on paper. Like, can Galway use this? I think, to be honest, look, before I get your thoughts on it, I think we should preface this by saying John Caulfield's sides have been playing actually some really good football. I saw them in Talca firsthand the other week, and they drew, and they were actually brilliant. I thought Shells were lucky to come out of the game with something in it. But can they turn the screw a little bit more and push themselves away from this relegation scrap that seems to be unfurling now, thanks to Waterford's results?
Yeah, 100%. It's brilliant. I mean, for the league, I was delighted to see Waterford win as well. It just kind of spices up the relegation, the playoff battle. But going down to Pearce Stadium, listen, I agree with you. John Caulfield gets a raw deal when it comes to the styles he played. It is different. It's more direct, but they've got some good players. We don't have to talk about Ed McCarthy's goals recently and his run of form. He's playing some great football. Listen, Derry won't mind going down there. Galway won't mind going down there. You talked about Turner's Cross. These things have to happen to get better facilities. You can't shout about better facilities, better facilities, better facilities, and then moan about people moving and trying to accommodate maintenance or structural work in the stadium. So this is all good. We can't use it as soundbites to have a pop. This is good. Derry will go down and play the game. They're used to playing on Celtic Park, which is not ideal either. I would imagine there's no sprinkler system either in Pearce Stadium. Like, it's going to be dry, it's going to be long. You just have to play the conditions, you know. And it's a good opportunity for Galway to I mean, it obviously levels it out. I mean, Galway being away from their pitch, it doesn't help. Derry's the same. So it levels it out almost to a 50-50 game, but it'll be a crucial game when you look at that second from bottom position.
Vinny, Gareth mentioned it briefly there about John Caulfield and maybe getting a bad rap sometimes for a style of play. That is it really true? Like, I think sometimes Galway get an unfair sort of treatment for the style of football that they play.
It's not the easiest in the eye at times, but that's grand. It's also not caveman football either as well. They mix it up a little bit. So it is what it is. It goes back to, I suppose, John's style, maybe going back to what he was when he was managing that Cork team, when he bags of talent all over the dressing room, and they were probably a little bit direct for a lot of people. I think we live in a war now where people want the beautiful game. I think you've got to have a fine balance with it. I think by and large John seems to get that.
I think we have Vinny back on the line there. Apologies for that, folks. So this Friday night, Pearce Stadium, Derry City versus Galway United. We mentioned that relegation battle. Vinny, Graham Coughlin has turned this from an unlikely dream to maybe a bit more of a probability. A 4-0 win over Sligo Rovers last week.
Yeah, dare I say, I told you so. I felt he would get a real tune at Waterford. Whether it's enough, we're going to find out in a couple of weeks. Drogheda, Sligo and Galway in particular will have a really nervous look over the shoulder over the next few weeks. What Graham has done is he's gone into that club and he's got them... He's got them down for the cause. He's got them running. There's a bit of old skillness about it, but it's certainly working. And everything went their way against Sligo, but they've been so unlucky in a couple of games over the season. They're probably due a little bit of luck now. Maybe had that in one or two games. The penalty decision went their way as well, didn't it? So there's a couple of things have gone their way, but they deserve it. They've had a lot of bad luck over this course of the season. So... would not shock me if they got out of that bottom spot now because of the style of Graham Coughlin. And I've seen him work at close quarters. So, beyond no illusions, he's going to die on a sword trying to get them out. So, fascinating view. And I'd be really, really worried for the other clubs. Just struggling to get away from them, from Galway down, really struggling to get away from Waterford.
Vinny, I wouldn't block you to tell us that you told us so. Gareth, Paul Jammond, Tommy Lonergan was the man on form for Waterford for first half of the season, excuse me. Paul Jammond seems to have found his shooting boots as well with a hat-trick the other night. I mean, the two of them, is it bold to say that that's a strike partnership that any team in the league would have up top?
Yeah, well, you would fear it anyway. There's no question about that. There's goals galore. I mean, and it just, Coughlin just came out after, it just gives you an insight into the mentality of the man. He turned around and he says, yeah, Poy's got three, but he should have got four. Like, there's a real hunger and accountability there that the players are obviously thriving off. But Lonergan was, like, we watched him for 4 or 5 weeks. He's been probably the in-form striker in the league with Amund. Just playing that support act. Now you've got Amund stepping up to the plate as well. How nice is that, having two hungry goal-scoring strikers? So keeping them fit. Finney's saying that the others need to kind of keep an eye. They're only 5 points behind Sligo. It'll be very interesting now if they just run out of games. But the next 3 or 4 weeks is going to be crucial for all three teams. And let's be honest, I mean, Derry 25 are probably out of that, so anywhere from Galway down would be would be looking over their shoulder to see how did Waterford do.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easy for John Russell's side coming up. The next three games, St Patrick's Athletic away on Friday night. That's our live League of Ireland commentary game. Steve will be back in for that one. Then they've got Shelburne, then they've got Shamrock Rovers, and then it's a Connacht derby again away to the Tribesmen in Galway. Like, are you worried, Vinny, if you're a Sligo Rovers fan? Are you getting seriously worried? That's a huge result, a 4-0 loss to your relegation rival.
Yeah, you absolutely are worried if you're a Sligo fan. I mean, to be fair to them, they've got out of it over the last number of years and they've gone on some good runs around this stage of the season to get themselves out of it. But sometimes all of that runs out on you and there's no way back from it. So they probably need two or three big wins in the next month just to give them that breathing space. But I wouldn't be just necessarily, I'd be as worried if I was in Drogheda's changing rooms as Sligo's changing room, to be honest with you. So both of them teams in particular, I think, have a lot of work to do. People are just presuming because of Drogheda have been so good over the last number of years, but I just fear for them a little bit this year. I hope I'm wrong. I think we need that second club in Louth in the Premier Division. But they're the ones in particular that I fear for. But you sort of get a sense that Sligo know how to deal with this. John Russell knows how to deal with this. And it'll be just about okay. But it's a big, big test for them over the next few weeks because, as we said, Waterford aren't going away anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, funny, but you got to feel for Sligo at the minute. My God, they've got, like, you look at their injuries, Hakiki, Mikkelsen, McHugh, Jackie, Quirky, Reynolds, Blaney. Like, Sligo have always been able to shoot their way out of it, right? They've only scored 15 goals this season. That's 10 less than Waterford. At the back, we've always had question marks around Sligo. I really feel for them this time. I think John Russell's done an unbelievable job the last three or four seasons keeping them either second bottom, third bottom. But I really worry for them this season. I really do.
Yeah, just on that, Gareth, it's only because of what they've done in the last 4 or 5 years that you daren't say, yeah, they're going to really struggle, because they go and win. They win games you just never expect them to win, don't they? And just get results from nowhere. So, but if you're looking for favourites to finish second bottom, their favourites probably, and you know, and they're probably second favourites to be relegated. So we see.
John Russell, a man that we've wrote off time and time again, and then he picks it around, as you said, around this time of the season. And Sligo, obviously, we should. I think it's rude to mention, if we don't mention every single time, operating on a shoestring budget out there, and the loss of Owen Elding, all these sorts of things come into factors. The injury list, which seems to be mounting more and more by the week. But the other team that you mentioned there, Vinny, Drogheda United. I was at Richmond Park on Friday night, and look, Pats were good in spells. Keen Levy was excellent, as he always is throughout the game. Really, his first goal is, I spoke to Kenny after the game, and it's something that they've been working on, that as soon as the ball falls in the box, he looks up, he picks a spot, he buries it. Maybe something with question marks about was his end product. But Drogheda United, and I don't think Kev Doherty would mind anyone saying this, they were toothless on Friday night. Really, really poor going forward. And you kind of worry for them. After watching that game, you'd worry from where the goals are going to come. Mark Doyle was on his own up top, but no one really anywhere near him. Derek Ream came on for the last couple of minutes and was a bit more of a presence, but they never once looked like threatening the goal. There was one chance, which Danny Rogers stepping in for Joey Anang, did quite well to save. But Vinny, you referenced it a couple of minutes ago. You'd be very, very worried for Drogheda United now.
Yeah, they just haven't been able to get that run of consistent form, or they haven't picked up two or three, or even if they have, it doesn't feel like they're about to pick up two or three big wins in a row. And I think you're right, toothless up front. Mark Doyle can be outstanding on his day. And we really thought he was a good signer for them, and I think he will be. But they've just been searching all season long, played with a back four. They've tried the back four. People have sort of said, it's funny, Gareth's played a lot more recently than I did. You know, when you're going up to Drogheda now, all week, coaches, players, management, you're all expecting set pieces, be ready for second phase. And you can say, well, why weren't you expecting that last year? You were to a point, but it just comes a point where people go, right, we've got to deal with this. And you work and work all week on it. And it's with Drogheda, with the three centre halves, he's the lead. it wasn't often the first cross that came into the box. It was the way he kept it alive. So I'm not saying teams have sort of sussed him out, but there will be an element of that going on, you know.
Do you want to pick up from that that point?
Yeah, I mean, it was worrying, wasn't it, if you were at Drogheda? And listen, Drogheda will look at away Pats and they'll go, did we expect much from that? Like, they're in that mentality now where they're looking at the teams around them. They're looking at those matches going, we have got to pick up at least a point, if not 3 points from all those games now, just to kind of get us up and get us safe. I mean, 21 points, 20 games played. It's not ideal considering the last two seasons. And it might be a case of Kevin Doherty, just that the magic that he's worked over the last three or four seasons, that expectations are too high. A bit like John Russell, where we're expecting them to kick on now at this age of the season. Maybe that was just they're going to run out. But I think Warren Davis being missing is a big loss. And I'm looking here, was he injured again, Ben? Or
yeah, he's injured again. He was a doubt coming into it. They didn't know if he was listed as doubtful on the list that came into us, but
he's a huge loss, a huge loss. And once you lose, once you're Drogheda, Galway, even Derry to a certain extent, you lose two or three of your better players, then the quality coming in after that is nowhere near as good. And that's the case with Drogheda. They had an early chance against Pats where the keeper saved it, but after that it was just, I mean, to give you an idea, Elbazetti ran from the sideline the whole way in, the 19 yards out, in the middle of the goal and put it in the corner. There wasn't a tackle, there wasn't a shoulder, there wasn't nothing. And that's very unlike Drogheda, very unlike Drogheda. They need to get back to basics. But again, Kevin Doherty's done it before as well. In a relegation scrap, I think I would be back in Drogheda.
Yeah, we've Vinny back on the line as well. Just to reference that Elbazetti goal, Conor Keighley had been off the pitch. There was a clash of heads. We timed it on the sideline. He was off the pitch for over 2 minutes, and Kevin Doherty was roaring at the fourth official, and so was Darragh Doyle to let him back on. He wasn't let back on. I think there might be a few moments like that with these new rules where it's, you know, all of a sudden up to the referee's discretion. We've seen a little bit of it in the World Cup as well, where players are fuming on the sidelines. They're not being let back onto the pitch. That felt like it was a big hole that Elbazetti managed to exploit there. So we'll have to see how those play out. I'm wary of we're running a bit low on time. There's a couple of things we haven't mentioned. The champions lost last Friday night against Shelburne. Like, a huge win for Shelburne. Meepo Adebeko is back. Vinny, is he someone who can make a difference for Shelburne now going forward?
Yeah, apologies, Ben. I keep getting cut off. It must be me South African links I'm on at the moment. Apologies. That's what happens when you're a World Cup co-con, Gareth.
That's what happens when you've grown too big for the League of Ireland pod. That's what that is.
So that game was really, really good on Friday. I thought Shells were excellent. We've been saying all year long, all of us on the pod, about Shells getting better as the season goes on. I think Meepo coming back from injury was huge for them. He was brilliant on the counter-attack, yes. Rovers and Bradley felt that he controlled the game for a lot of periods. They had, but for me, they lacked a little bit of cutting edge, and they can do that every so often. But taking nothing away from Shells, they were really controlled, very good on the counter attack. There's no doubt we didn't think it'd be this much, to be honest with you. I think I'm surprised how much it's affected them. But Pico Lopez missing, they're not winning enough games without him. Just need to be careful now over the next couple of weeks that they concentrate and win the next few games, because albeit no one's putting them under real pressure, Pat's had a good win the other day, they're still sitting top of the table, and they've lost, correct me if I'm wrong, but have they lost 5 games already this season? If not more,
five,
so
that's
a lot. Yeah, that's a lot for a team like Shamrock Rovers this early in the season, and to be still, you know, pretty much clear. So but taking on the White Michelle's really good. They're still missing some bodies. You think about Garen McInerney, Roy missing. You think about Henry Francis. You think about Casey missing. They're huge losses. But the bonus was what Meepo done. Yes, he got lucky with McGinty. Was poor for the goal. But his running power, his determination, even for the first goal. The first goal was a thing of beauty from Shells. It was absolutely brilliant all-round play. And Harry Wood was exceptional, by the way, for them. Absolutely exceptional. So they will fancy a top three finish, Shells, with a good run between now and the end of the season. and securing European football. So,
I think they're going to finish best of the rest. If not, I think with their game in hand, they move up to 32 if they win that. That's a point behind Bowes. And I think Norris coming back, Vinny, gives him balance. Massive to get him fit and up and running. With him on that side and Mbeng on the other side, where they've been missing them for a lot of the season, I think that'll give them a balance, but also a wee bit of aggression. I like Norris.
Vinny and I spoke up in Dundalk the other week about when Rovers lost that game to Dundalk, they would have got into the dressing room, seen the results and saw Pats didn't win. The inverse of that happened on the weekend where Pats did win when Rovers got back into the dressing room. Gareth, is there a chance now really with Pico gone? I think it's fair to say that we've seen the loss he is. It is actually a huge loss. We thought it would be. It turns out it is. There's only 5 points in it now at the top of the table. Could Pats catch him while Pico's gone to the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, Vinny's been pretty vocal that he thinks it's going to be 9+ points. I don't think so. I think this is going to go down to 2 or 3 points either way. I think Pats, Bowes obviously at the weekend is a massive slip-off. Had they have won that, then that would have put them right back in there as well. But I don't. 5 losses by Shamrock Rovers, they're not flying. They're not the dominant force that they used to be. There's cracks there. Pico's one of those cracks. I still think they haven't got a striker to score goals. Even that Shells game, I thought Rovers played quite well. Balls firing across the box, nobody there. I think a striker has got to be the top priority for Shamrock Rovers in the window. They do that, they get someone in to score the goals, then Vinny could be right. They could be 9+ points. But at the minute, if it stays the way it is, I think it's going to be a lot tighter than people think.
The only team we haven't mentioned, Dundalk, team close to Vinny's heart. They will take on Bohemians this Friday night. Back-to-back wins for Kieran Cullough's side. They've got their mojo back well and truly back under the rhythm. Is there a chance that Bohemians could suffer back-to-back defeats? We might not see Stephen Doyle back here next week after all, Vinny.
Yeah, I think there's a big chance of that. I think Dundalk have been a breath of fresh air, and I think it all comes from, yes, they've got a good spine in the team, and the goalkeeper's been really good for them despite the injury he had to Conor Cairns earlier in the season. But the form of young Kenny Arubi, and probably arguably people talk about Dawson Devoy, and I think Horgan is right up there with him. If you're voting for player of the year at the moment, Darrell Horgan has been outstanding for Dundalk. Absolutely back to his very, very best. Almost looks like the player that went to Preston in 2016. Very close to that. And it's also the manner in which they're doing things. It's that front foot football. It's high press, high intensity. It's sending centre-halves in after people. And everything that Kilduff is doing is likeable. And I have to say, there's a calmness around that club at the moment. There's a quietness and there's a sort of a bit of assurance that they're on the right pathway. And he sort of pitifies that in that club in terms of the way he carries himself in the media as well. So all is looking so good for them. They have to chase Europe. They may not get there, and I can understand if they do fall short, but they've got to chase the top three position now. Really go after it. And if he needs one or two in the window, the club, if possible, have to try and back him as well. So it's been his sort of scorecard at the moment is A+, and so is Dundalk's. It's been really good.
Feels like the type of game that if they're going to push for Europe, this feels like it could be a pretty pivotal one. Darrell Horgan as well, the Soccer Writers Player of the Month last month for May, and I don't think many people are too disappointed with that. Just before we let you go, Vinny, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this wondering, how on earth have you got involved with South African TV for the World Cup?
It's because I'm so good on Off the Ball every Friday night, Ben, that obviously that's where it comes from. There you go.
And are you zooming into them? Are they flying you down to Johannesburg and Cape Town? How does it work?
You know, there's a few trade secrets about how you do these COCOM games and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's a couple of us doing it as well. So, it's There's a company that do a lot of these COCOM games for Belgian TV as well, and French TV for English speaking people. So there's an element of that. But yeah, I've got a bit of stick from people on social media down around that neck of the woods. So I'm obviously doing something right.
Tell you what, Gareth, we know where to go now when we're looking for our next gigs, eh? International.
They wouldn't understand the accent from the Northwest Ireland. It'd be a disaster.
Oh, I'll join you on that one. Lads, Finny, well, enjoy the rest of your World Cup in between your League of Ireland. We're the side gig now. So thanks a lot, Finny. Gareth McGlynn, Finny Pert, thank you very much for joining me this week. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Ben Times filling in for Stephen Doyle on the LOI pod. Chat to you next week, folks. Slán live.
Cheers, man.
The LOI pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.